Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And, Andrew, this is a Senate seat Republicans are pretty confident they would have won anyway, but it's looking even better now. We're talking about the Montana Senate seat, the Democrats perhaps using a little gamesmanship in trying to keep this thing. Max Baucus was retiring. Somehow he got appointed to be the next ambassador to China, even though he admitted in his confirmation hearing he really didn't know that much about China. As a result, the lieutenant governor of Montana was appointed the new senator, so the Democrats have an incumbent on the ballot this year. His name is John Walsh. He's already losing to the congressman from the state of Montana, Steve Daines. Now there's this story that John Walsh, when he was writing a master's thesis at the Army War College, plagiarized about a third of his paper. This is according to the hot air version of the story. About a third of his paper consists of material either identical to or extremely similar to passages in other sources, such as the Carnegie or Harvard papers. Looks like he took a little bit from The Case for Democracy as a Long-Term National Strategy without attribution from a Carnegie Endowment for International Peace document on the same topic. Didn't use a lot of quotation marks, and the latest we've heard is that he was dealing with PTSD at the time, and that's his excuse for not citing his sources. So, Andrew, what do you make of this?
And it's also important to note this wasn't some college student, 20-somethings, you know, burning the midnight oil for a final, for his final thesis. I mean, he did this not too long ago. He did this at the age of 46. I think it was 2007 when he did it. But, I mean, yeah, like you said, Republicans are hoping to pick this seat up anyway, so this probably only helps their chances. This definitely doesn't reflect well on Walsh. I saw somewhere a splattering of local Montana newspapers, and this was the lead story everywhere. Like you said, there was some gamesmanship, so I think sort of the fact that Walsh was appointed, although Baucus was already retiring, and technically he's an incumbent, even though he's only been there, you know, maybe 6 months kind of thing, it was already not sitting well with some people. So if anything, this just bolsters Republicans' chances at hopefully picking up a seat they wanted to pick up, or they wanted to pick up the other seat in 2012. It didn't go their way. That was a close race. At least this way, with the latest Walsh news, hopefully it just bolsters their chances.
Andrew, in terms of how much voters will care about this, we'll certainly see in Montana how much they care about it. And we know this sort of thing cost Joe Biden a shot at the presidential nomination in 1988, although he was probably an underdog anyway. But given how many issues we have to deal with right now, how high will plagiarism be in the minds of voters, you think?
I don't think it'll be the first thing on voters' minds per se. Like you said, it did plague Biden, but hey, he's vice president of the United States now. Rand Paul came under fire earlier this year, last year, and you know, people thought that would dog him, and he seems to sort of have shaken that a little bit. There was a little scuffle, but you know, he's kind of past that. If anything, it sort of just sticks as some as sort of a reflection of someone's character, maybe that plays into a bigger picture. But yeah, at the end of the day, I don't think too many people, with everything going on, from domestic issues and Obamacare and everything there to international issues that we have dealing with now, from Iraq and Russia, yeah, I don't think it'll be the first thing on people's mind. But it makes headlines for a day, and it sort of labels him with this moniker that he didn't have 24 hours ago.
Yeah, questionable ethics, I suppose, will be entered into the campaign now. On to the bad martini now, and it was just a couple of months ago that this was the good martini, because Scott Walker was ahead in Wisconsin at that time by about 15 or 16 points. But now a new Marquette University poll suggests he's essentially in a dead heat with his Democratic challenger, Union favorite Mary Burke. According to the poll, both are a few points below 50%. Among registered voters, Walker is up 1 point. Among likely voters, Burke is up 1 point. Hard to understand exactly where this lead evaporated from and why, but Scott Walker being in trouble is not something we were ready for here, Andrew, and if he goes down, it'll be a huge blow to conservatives.
Yeah, for sure, and actually I think I had that martini with you when we were talking about Walker's lead just a few months ago. Now that I think about it, Walker was considered sort of a 2016 potential candidate. A lot of people saw him as sort of a dark horse, even though he had a national platform. But this lead, I think, is something that conservatives should be wary of. I mean, even that first poll didn't show Walker with a runaway lead, and I think we had just sort of taken for granted. He had won his recall. He had already won two elections. I'm sure Wisconsin voters are over it, but clearly some aren't, and Burke is slowly but surely sort of inching up. So it is a race I think Republicans should be a little wary of.
And it's certainly obviously one he can still win. We're still not really into the heart of this campaign. Both parties' nominees have been pretty much established for a while now, and we'll get really into the boxing match here in a couple of months to come. So a lot can happen. Republicans are feeling pretty good across the board, but polls like this are a pretty good reminder that people haven't actually voted yet. So you actually have to go out and do the work and get people excited about your ideas and about your candidates. So
yeah, and there have been a lot of negative ads when I've been reading in Wisconsin against Walker, and again, Walker already kind of had his people that were against him, and he is being a little plagued by a campaign promise he made in 2010 about bringing 250,000 jobs to the state in his first term, and it looks like he may come up short, and Burke has really been hitting him on that. There's still some time to go. Walker does have the name recognition. Walker does have national stature in some ways, and he should be able to eke it out, but definitely probably a tougher fight than he and many of his supporters were expecting.
Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, on to the crazy martini now, and yesterday was Bad Martini Hyperventilation Day, as decreed by Jim Garrity, because he just didn't see any good news out there. We had Europe essentially cowering in the face of Russian-backed rebels shooting down an airliner, and less than a week after the tragedy, saying, "No, we're not really going to do anything to hold Putin accountable. We're just not really sure that we could do anything about it." And then we talked about the FAA temporarily stopping U.S. flights into Tel Aviv, and European countries and airlines doing the same. That feature has been reversed now. There will be Western flights heading back into Israel. But one of those that Jim actually gave kudos to yesterday was former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, which is not a common event on this podcast, for very boldly and loudly saying that he thought the FAA ban on flights, however temporary, was a terrible idea. And he flew to Israel to prove that it was safe. And so then he had an odd conversation with Wolf Blitzer. Wolf asked him to talk about why he thinks it's still safe in Israel. And here's initially how it started, which seemed pretty normal. And then it got really, really weird.
If you don't feel safe here, I don't know where you'd feel safe. And I think the State Department is just overreacting in typical bureaucratic fashion.
Political reasons for that?
Why would you think that?
Well, do you think it? I'm asking you.
That's ridiculous. Why would you think that? It's an outrage for you to accuse one of our agencies.
I'm just asking, by
asking the question, you're implying that our government does things for political reasons. And maybe every once in a while they do. But it's your job to prove it. Just the allegation against our government, I personally take as an offense.
No, I'm just asking you if you thought that there was some political motive behind the travel advisory or the FAA decision.
Number one, I wouldn't know.
There's a lot of people in Israel do, you know.
I don't know. You don't know. And the other people don't know. But just the tone of the question of trying to create dissension, it's insulting to America.
Andrew, I'm sure you're insulted and appalled at the mere suggestion that an administration would ever do anything for political reasons.
No, yeah. I mean, as we've heard time and time again, this is the first administration that does not do anything for political reasons. So I don't know where Blitzer came off even suggesting that. But yeah, that was a very weird moment because the first time I saw it, I thought Bloomberg was being sarcastic. and then you know, clearly towards the end he was very upset with that Blitzer had even asked that. It's just very interesting that Bloomberg would react like that. I don't exactly get what he was getting at. And I mean, since then we've seen the FAA ban has been lifted, even though they said they were going to extend it for another 24 hours earlier in the day. This was late last night that they lifted it. And so I guess I feel like it was fair of Blitzer to ask the question, because if you put a 24-hour ban and then there's a lot of pushback again and you lift it, I don't know what suddenly changed. And so Bloomberg gave Blitzer a little too hard a time for that.
Yeah. For a guy that flew halfway around the world to make a point about the policy, there's a little bit of politics in there.
Yeah,
too,
I mean, I guess he's saying he just flew there because of, quote, typical bureaucratic fashion. I mean, it seemed Bloomberg perhaps maybe overreacted a little bit.
You know, for a guy who likes to ban things, it's impressive.
Exactly.
It's impressive that he didn't like this ban. So. Andrew, we'll leave it there. Have a great day. Thanks for filling in.
Hey, no problem. Had a good time. Take it easy.
Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Friday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us then for the next 3 Martini Lunch.